There are many secrets at the heart of the comedy mystery Glass Onion, just as there were in its predecessor Knives Out. Who lives? Who dies? Who done it? What's the truth behind the glamorous Glass Onion itself?
Rian Johnson's latest film to feature Detective Benoit Blanc is now on Netflix. We are ready to get into the nitty-gritty and spoil the heck out of Glass Onion. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. And in this spoiler-packed episode of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we're talking about the movie Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery. Joining us today is Margaret H. Willison, Communications Manager of Not Sorry Productions. Hey, Margaret.
Hi, you guys.
And also with us is Christina Tucker, co-host of the podcast Wait, Is This a Date? Welcome back, Christina.
What up again?
I know. We are all gathered once again. We did cover this film a few weeks ago without spoilers, so that episode you can also find if you would prefer that. But we now find ourselves later prepared to dive into the spoilers. Glass Onion involves a tech billionaire named Miles, played by Edward Norton, who sets up a reunion for his friends on his private island, where they will solve a murder mystery as the weekend's entertainment. They all show up: his former business partner Andy, played by Janelle Monáe; his politician friend Claire, played by Catherine Hahn; his scientist friend Lionel, played by Leslie Odom Jr.; his ex-model friend, Bertie J, played by Kate Hudson; and his streamer friend, Duke, played by Dave Bautista. Detective Benoit Blanc, last seen solving the mystery of Knives Out, is played by Daniel Craig, and Blanc also finds himself invited to the party, lending some additional weight to the party game that is solving the murder. Here is where we begin to spoil things. If you want to catch up with Glass Onion, it's streaming now on Netflix. Are you ready? Are we prepared? Have I made you aware? Okay. Everybody comes to the island, and Blanc quickly dispenses with Miles' party game that he's so carefully planned, because Blanc is a brilliant detective and Miles is not brilliant. It seems like things are going to be pretty calm, but then Duke dies in the middle of the living room floor from an apparent poisoning, and in the aftermath of that, Andy is shot. Oh, no. This is sort of the first section of the movie. However, as was the case with Knives Out, we get one big reveal part of the way through the movie that recasts the events in a new light through flashbacks. So we learn that Andy is not Andy, but is actually Andy's twin sister, Helen. Andy herself has been murdered, and Helen wants to figure out who did it before her death becomes public. Helen went to, and again, we're all flashing back at this point, Helen went to Blanc for help after finding Andy's invitation to the party from Miles, and they decided they would both attend the weekend's festivities with Helen pretending to be Andy. So Andy was not shot on the island. Phew, Helen was shot, and thanks to a hardback notebook in her pocket, she's unharmed, but she and Blanc have faked her death to throw off the rest of the guests. Revisiting the events up to this point through the lens of all this new information is kind of the second section of the movie. So they take you all through all that first stuff plus some more stuff, knowing what you know now, which is that Blanc was brought there by Helen to help to solve all this. The third section actually solves the mysteries. It turns out that Miles poisoned Duke because Duke was the only one who could prove the underlying and painful truth that Miles killed Andy to prevent her from exposing him as a fraud. Ultimately, Helen manages to defeat Miles and arrange his downfall, avenging her sister's death. That is a lot. Let us get to it. Christina, when all is said and done, how did the answers to all these questions work for you?
When all is said and done, the answers worked very well for me. In the beginning of the film, I was like, did Janelle Monáe forget how to act? Why is she being so weird? Like, what's going on here? Which, of course, was then revealed to be, in fact, not Andy, but her twin sister, Helen. So that her strange kind of affect and, like, choices as she walked around and said kind of surprising and startling things to people started to make a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, this is one of those mysteries where you go in and you're kind of like, huge, suspicious tech billionaire. I don't really buy that this is like a good, chill guy kind of from jump, but it was very satisfying to kind of watch all of it unravel and watch how much of it was not necessarily by anything nefarious that he has planned to do, but mostly that he is just an idiot. You know, this whole group of people that he is so kept in his thrall all these years, thanks to having so much money, are all kind of done with him. They're all kind of disappointed and sick of him for various reasons, mostly, again, because he is the worst. And it was just very delightful to watch all of that unfurl and very satisfying to watch our King Benoit Blanc just be like, but you're just dumb? Like, come on, really? Like, yeah. his genuine disappointment that, like, this was not, like, a real nemesis to go toe-to-toe with for him was, like, very fun and satisfying to watch.
Right. I agree. Margaret, how about you? How did it strike you?
I am thrilled. As I said on the first episode, big Agatha Christie person, and I come into these and I'm like, what mystery is he going to do this time? I definitely clocked that this was going to be the peril at End House, where it's like, you think everyone is trying to kill this rich girl, but actually this rich girl has staged the whole thing so she can kill her best friend and make it look like someone was trying to get her. I could tell that that was Edward Norton's deal. But then there were so many sort of like lovely little filigreed bits around that I could never have guessed, but that were all nevertheless like painstakingly woven into the first half of it. And it was just like, oh, like this is what I want every time I engage with a whodunit. This is like ASMR. Like, I think it's like that level of satisfying.
I agree.
Also, just Janelle Monáe's performance and the way that twist enriches it and the dynamic that gets to come up between she and Daniel Craig throughout is just so like lovely. And it's sort of the warm, grounding human center of this circus of absurd rich people.
Right.
And I'm so pleased with how well he did that.
Yeah. And clearly, like, as you learn that their relationship is what it is, that she came to him for help, that she told him that her sister had already died, you have that moment where you're like, well, surely she's not dead.
Yeah.
That's too sad. So clearly she's not dead. And so by the time she pops up in the flashback and you learn that she's not dead, it's not a surprise, but it's kind of a surprise that you've sprung on yourself in a way. It still feels really satisfying because by the time she pops up, you're like, aha, I knew she wasn't dead.
Well, I also was just like, I know the what Rian Johnson is actually trying to get at in these movies. And I'm aware that like, in order to kind of further this agenda, he is not going to kill the black woman in this space. Like, I was just like, I know that's not what's going to happen here.
Right. Well, not twice. Yeah.
Yeah.
The little reveal to me of when he pulls out the Jeremy Renner hot sauce. Like, you know that they're faking her death, right? Because she's now sat up and he's like, okay, but these people have to think you're dead. And you're thinking like, wait, what are they doing? Is it a squib? Because there was a thing, there was a reveal earlier that Edward Norton's character had squibs that he was using to fake blood. And then he takes out the thing of Jeremy Renner hot sauce, which had shown up before as kind of this little, very funny throwaway joke.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then it just comes back in that moment. Oh, such a joy. Steven, tell me what you thought.
I revel in the serial de-pantsing of Edward Norton's tech billionaire. It turns out this movie figured out a while ago that heavily hyped tech billionaires do not have spotless judgment or far-reaching intelligence.
This goes beyond any one real-life tech billionaire. This is a general finding, which you can tell from when this movie came out. But I agree with you, Stephen. He is humiliated over and over.
But when Benoit just, like, solves the mystery that the movie has been seeming to build to and just kind of matter-of-factly completely wipes out a weekend's worth of the best laid plans.
Planned for him by Gillian Flynn, by the way.
Gillian Flynn wrote this was so funny.
That was so funny. But just like how central to the story the puncturing of the myths around disruptors mm-hmm. is, like, could have been so heavy-handed, but in these hands, it really isn't. It's still a surprise. That is so impressive to me, because it's not that we've never been told the story of fraudulent billionaires before, but, like, with this level of specificity and ruthlessness,
yeah.
this feels like it is on the leading edge of a lot of stories like this. And so just the baffled just incredulity and disappointment mm-hmm. of Benoit Blanc realizing that he has met what is nowhere near his match is really, yeah. really, yeah. really fun.
And it's really satisfying how early they, like, kind of seed his feelings around that, where he's like, oh, this, you know, puzzle box with, like, a bunch of puzzles for children. And you get that, like, reaction of Edward Norton, like, okay, well, I worked really hard on those, but okay, fine.
But even the way the boxes are presented, mm-hmm. the beginning of this film, we're seeing different characters deal with the puzzles in this box, in these boxes. But then just the way the Janelle Monáe character just, like, hatchets the box apart is such a metaphor for what's to come, while also yep. revealing so much of the relationship dynamics at work. It's mm-hmm. so smart.
Right. And one of the things that I admire so much about any good mystery is when the more the pieces of the mystery are in plain sight, and then later when you see them, they take on additional meaning, the more I admire it. And I think about mm-hmm. that with two different things.
Yeah.
The scene in which Benoit Blanc points out these kind of just malapropisms, these kind of just that he doesn't know what words mean.
Yeah.
And you realize, I did know that, but I didn't put together, like, that it was all going to mean something at the end of the story. He was going to pull mm-hmm. it all together
yeah.
into you're a fraud and you couldn't possibly be, you know, it's not that you can't be smart and use words in the wrong way, but it's like you are creating an image around yourself that doesn't account for yeah. all the errors that you make day to day, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the
mm-hmm.
other thing, and this was the thing that I really walked out of the film most impressed by, you mentioned, Christina, the kind of the shift in the performance of Janelle Monáe.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed the shift in the performance of Daniel Craig. At the beginning of this film, I was watching it, and I am convinced that part of what Rian Johnson is playing with here is expectations about sequels. And sort of that when you see a character for the second time, like, they won't quite be the same. They won't quite remind you of themselves.
Yeah.
Because I was watching Blanc in those early scenes when he first arrives on the island. And I was thinking, I feel like they've made him cornier. And at the moment when I realized, like, this is why he was acting like this, because he sort of says to her that his plan is he's going to go to the island and kind of act up the sort of southern goober so that yeah. they don't suspect him as much. And all of a sudden I thought, oh, that's what it is. And mm-hmm. the shadings and the patience to put that in the front part of the movie and have faith in the audience that you can just wait and then explain that this character had different shadings for a story reason and you trust your actor. Mm-hmm. That is such a feat of balance to put enough in there that you notice it, but not enough that you immediately clock it as he has to be pretending to act like this. It is a real accomplishment. And I also want to talk about, by the way, these cameos.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just about to say.
Because the fact that he managed to come up with both Angela Lansbury and Stephen Sondheim
in
the same early kind of pandemic set Zoom call.
I want to know everything about how that Zoom call came to be. Like,
it's them and Natasha Lyonne.
And Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
But that's in this weird way, you're like, that's exactly who Benoit Blanc would be talking to.
Yes! 100%.
And you see him get called out of the Zoom call and out of the tub by his presumably boyfriend, I assume.
Partner, yeah.
It's not until much later that they reveal that that's Hugh Grant, who you only see yep. for like a second.
The one that really landed for me is Serena Williams.
Oh yeah.
Where, you know, she's just sort of there and you think, oh, like, that's just an image. And then at some point she interrupts them and she's like, do you guys want to work out?
Because the billionaire has her on a live thing, but he's not doing anything with it.
Perfect.
I think my actual favorite is Joseph Gordon-Levitt as the hourly dong.
Christina. I love Christina.
I want to shout out the use, the deployment of Noah Segan as this kind of Cato Kalin character who is on the premises, but doesn't have anything to do with anything that's going on. And he will occasionally walk by like, I'm not here. And you think like, okay, this is going to lead to something. This guy's here. It's like the Mona Lisa, like the big button that will expose the Mona Lisa. He's Jimmy McGuffin, but he really has no purpose except to occasionally just be a gag walking by. That's just as funny as if he had been part of some massive reveal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so funny to see him at the end with Benoit as he's just finally getting to have his cigar and he's just like smoking a joint and they're like, well, what a day, huh?
And can I give a shout to Dave Bautista for, if you're going to do a guy who gets poisoned and dies on the floor, you got to do like a big, I just got poisoned death. And they managed to do a big, I just got poisoned death without it being like, it's not mostly because it's like gory. It's not because he's like barfing or something like that.
Ooh.
He really puts his all into this death scene.
Yeah, he crushed it.
It is just a really high quality, I just got poisoned and I'm going to roll around on the floor and die. Mona, like, get it, Dave Bautista.
Truly. I mean, when he hits that coffee table, it's like, yeah, that is what it would look like if a mountain fell upon this table.
If Dave Bautista fell on a coffee table, this is what it would look like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think everybody is just really nicely used here. I think all these people, even Catherine Hahn, who, if anybody is maybe a little underused for me, it might be Catherine Hahn. Just because I know how good she is and I've seen her do kind of this, like, but I mean, I still loved watching her and I still loved seeing her in this and how she immediately, like, as soon as things start to go south, she's like, I can't be here. I can't be here. Yeah, I think everybody, I mean, good for Kate Hudson, who still...
Just delightful to be on screen.
Yeah, I mean, can still kind of do the same thing she was doing 15 years ago, except that now she's more... knowing about it, it feels more masterful to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, feels more wry in a way. Also, just that reveal that she just like really thought that's where sweatpants were made. I was like, oh,
I know. I loved that. I loved that.
So many good jokes. So many good jokes in this film.
What I think is so, so impressive about this on a joke level, on a mystery level, on a cameo level is like, there's no smugness. There's no self-satisfaction in how any of it is presented. There's never a moment where he's like, did you get that joke, guys? Did you see that hint? He's never punching it. They're just popped in there and you just get to absorb it. And there's like so much trust of the viewer that you're going to understand the message that he wants to communicate, that you're going to follow the mystery, that you're going to put together who these characters are and how they relate to each other. It's so refreshing to just... have a movie that rewards close attention and like feel like you're cooperating with the writer, director, person behind it.
Yeah, it's really satisfying to hear those kinds of jokes that don't have that like a Marvel disease follow-up of like, I guess we're doing that now. Like, it's right. So nice to just like hear a joke and then move on from it.
Yeah, I just think it is the variety of tones of jokes in that some of them are really big, like the idea of like he has the Mona Lisa in his living room or the idea of like, you know, the bigger kind of jokey jokes, like the joke about the sweatpants and that, like, that's just a joke, right? That's just a joke.
Yeah, right.
But it also has these really pulled back things where it's just funny that that would like be a thing. And then it has the jokes that are kind of character jokes. And it's just, to me, what I appreciate about it is that there's a little bit of everything. And then you also get a really satisfying mystery. Tremendous chemistry, I think, between Janelle Monáe and Daniel Craig.
Oh, incredible.
Comedic and kind of emotional. And really, like, what a pleasure. Mm-hmm. Just, like, what a pleasure. This has been a tremendous joy, and I greatly, greatly appreciated the movie and even more greatly appreciated the opportunity to talk about it with all of you guys. I would give any of you the keys to the Mona Lisa, if I could.
And what's the worst that could happen?
And what's the worst? What's the worst that could happen?
I toast all of you with my case of Jared Leto's hard kombucha that just arrived.
That's Jared Leto's hard kombucha. All right. Well, we want to know what you think about Glass Onion. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Stephen Thompson, Margaret H. Willison, Christina Tucker, thanks to all of you for being here for this mega party.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
We want to take a moment to thank our Pop Culture Happy Hour Plus subscribers. We appreciate you so much for showing your support for NPR. If you haven't signed up yet, you want to show your support, and you want to listen to this show without any sponsor breaks, head over to plus.npr.org/happyhour or visit the link in our show notes. This episode was produced by Hafsa Fathima and edited by Jessica Reedy. Hello Come In provides our theme music, which also contains an hourly dong. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all tomorrow.